This is Audible.
Macmillan Audio presents A Deadly Divide by Asma Zehanat Khan, read for you by Peter Ganim. I learned that the Canadian government was going to take more refugees who couldn't go to the United States, and they were coming here. I saw that, and I lost my mind. I don't want us to become like Europe. I don't want them to kill my parents, my family. I had to do something. It was something that tortured me. Alexandre Bissonnette, the shooter in the 2017 Quebec mosque shooting. I do not know why I committed such a senseless act. Alexandre Bissonnette, Statement of Guilt, March 2018. Prologue. The watcher followed Issa Khattak home, observing the detective in the dark. For all his skills and aptitude, Khattak didn't know. He'd never known that he was being followed because signs of pursuit had been cleverly disguised. There had been moments when the temptation to leave a calling card had been nearly too much to resist, the furtive delight to be gained from witnessing Khattak's response, of tasting his sudden panic at how close the threat had come. But the watcher's patience was limitless. The moment to act would be soon. And when it came, it wouldn't be decided by a note left at Khattak's door. The end game was playing out. The climax would be profound. Just outside the door to his house, Khattak answered his phone. He had seemed tired when he searched for his keys, but now his features softened, a smile curving his lips as he set down his case at his side. It would be the woman, then. The woman Khattak had left in Greece, the one he'd since come to love. The woman was intriguing because she mattered to him. Tracking her travels abroad had posed a new kind of challenge, but Khattak was, by far, the more riveting of the pair. The watcher kept waiting for a misstep, for a sign that Khattak was someone other than he seemed. But his private face was not all that different from his public one, except where women were concerned. That was when the detective finally let down his guard, just as he was doing now, laughing with the woman on the other end of the phone. He was warm, expressive, perhaps even emotional. Words not often used to describe Inspector Khattak. But now there were next steps to be considered. Wait for Khattak to leave his house in the morning, or return to Greece to resume surveillance there, or do neither of those things and head west to the home of Sergeant Rachel Getty, a woman of significance in Issa Khattak's life. There were other possibilities, too, but these were the most compelling. The strike, when it came, would be hard. A moment of decision, now. The watcher rubbed a cold steel weight with careful, clever hands, paused for the space of a breath, then held it up to shoot. Chapter 1. Blood saturated the walls, the stink of it creeping into his nostrils. By any measure, the scene was sickening. It was more devastation at a single crime scene than Issa Khattak had ever witnessed. From the green tinge to Rachel's skin, he could see it was the same for her. Their eyes met across the hall, sharing the moment of horror. They'd been called at once and had arrived as quickly as possible after the shooting, a mere matter of hours. Rachel was at the door, canvassing the mosque's parking lot. Khattak had been permitted access to the narrow cordon set up by crime scene technicians in the midst of the dead. He wore a protective forensic suit, Superintendent Martine Killiam at his side. He photographed the scene methodically, finding it easier to deal with the sight of bodies through the distancing mechanism of his lens. He made the count to himself. Two bodies in the corner had fallen back against the small shelf of books. Two more were slumped sideways in the main prayer space, where the green and white carpeting was soaked through. Another body was pitched against the mihrab, its white robes spattered with starbursts of blood. The delicately tiled niche had been damaged by a spray of bullets, its shards scattered over the carpet. A tiny turquoise flower lay inches from Khatak's feet. He turned in the opposite direction to the scene he'd put off photographing to the end. Two bodies close enough to touch and farthest from the door, one huddled inside the protective embrace of the other. A father and his small son. The assailant had targeted both. A small community, a small mosque, with seven dead in the prayer hall. And there was one more, killed in the small passageway that led from the imam's office to the main hall, this time by a single gunshot to the head, assailant and victim facing each other. The man who Khatak presumed had shot them was sitting on a chair at the far end of the hallway, a semi-automatic weapon cradled in his lap. It was an AR-15. He was surrounded by Sûreté officers who spoke to him in French, patient with his bewilderment. Khatak glanced at him once, a comprehensive glance, long enough to see the small gold cross he wore on a chain at his neck, and to note the details of his clothing, a gray cardigan worn over a blue shirt, black trousers and formal dress shoes slightly scuffed at the toes. The man in the chair seemed slight and insignificant, his thin patch of hair compensated for by a full-grown beard, his eyes wide and dazed. His clothes, hands, and face were free of blood spatter, but his hands were locked around the weapon. A powerfully built man with an air of command was speaking to the man with the gun in a surprisingly gentle voice, his tone respectful and kind. Issa couldn't make out his words, but after a few minutes, the gun was released into the hands of the technicians. A moment later, the man in the chair was helped to his feet and escorted from the mosque through a side entrance. Khatak turned to Killiam. The heat inside the mosque was stifling, yet he found his hands were cold. He put away his phone. "No handcuffs?" he asked her, fighting the tremor in his voice. Killiam shook her head. She'd made her own inventory of the scene, her sharp gray eyes missing nothing. She was wearing her dress uniform, the stripes at her shoulders indicative of her rank, and after a minute, the man in charge of the scene nodded at her in acknowledgement. She nodded back. Brusquely, she said to Khatak, "That's Christian Lemaire, a homicide detective with the SQ, the Sûreté du Québec. The man with the rifle is Étienne Roy. He's the priest at the local church. He holds a position of considerable influence. More than that, he is dear to the people of this town. They won't insult the church by cuffing him. My guess is Inspector Lemaire won't arrest him tonight." Khatak glanced at her sharply. "He was found with the weapon in his hand. And what do you conclude from that?" Khatak took a moment to think it through. Killiam had requested the presence of community policing detectives on site for a reason. She'd accompanied him personally, and not only because she expected Issa to do damage control in the small community that attended the mosque, their relationship had progressed beyond that. "He didn't look as though he'd ever held a gun in his hands. There's no blood trail leading from the prayer hall. His shoes are clean. And where's the gun?" "Inspector Lemaire's team has confiscated it. I mean the gun used to kill the victim in the hallway. It wasn't the AR-15. From the exit wound, I'd say it was a handgun. Has it been recovered from the scene? Killiam looked at him approvingly. No. So either there's a second shooter, or the priest was not involved. A new team had gathered at the entrance to the mosque. Lemaire went over to speak to them. Killiam straightened her jacket, speaking to Khattak in an undertone. Then why was the rifle in his hands? Maybe the priest came to the mosque in the aftermath of the shooting. Perhaps he tried to help some of the victims. Or it could be he wrestled the rifle away from the assailant. Killiam was watching Lemaire, a faint frown settling between her eyebrows. There's no evidence he did anything of the kind, and if he was engaged in a scuffle, why wasn't he shot? Lemaire looked back over his shoulder, fixing them with a penetrating glance. Khattak didn't have the answer. What he did have was questions raised by the way the priest had been dressed. He was about to raise this when Killiam swore under her breath. Khattak followed her line of sight to Lemaire and his efforts to coordinate the various branches of police insisting on access to the scene. His voice cut cleanly across the clatter. But it wasn't Lemaire who had drawn Killiam's attention. In the flickering light cast by ambulances and police cars, a hastily constructed platform had been arranged. A coterie of reporters were gathered in a circle around a neatly dressed woman in her 30s. Other press huddles had begun to form as well, demanding the attention of local officials. "We need to control how this shooting is covered from the outset." Killiam sounded worried, a rare emotion for her. Lemaire should get out there then, Khattak said. But when Killiam glanced back at him, her gray eyes frankly assessing, he understood at last why he and Rachel had been allowed access to the crime scene, and more important, why community policing had been called to assist at this shooting at a mosque in Quebec. She was expecting him to manage the public response to the crisis, to give it the community policing section's sanction, and to fulfill the CPS mandate, which was to play a mediating role between minority communities and law enforcement where violent crime had occurred. But looking across at the gathering of reporters, he knew that nothing about the shooting would be easy to manage or suppress, because one of his chief adversaries was speaking even now. Chapter 2 Wolf Allegiance Chat Room, English Language Page. Subject, Mosque Shooting. Comments open. White Victory. Too many attacks by refugees the government lets in without extreme vetting. We're fighting back and it's about time. 9-inch Nailer. Yeah, but I want to know how they got the AR-15. French Kisser. An assault rifle? 9-inch Nailer. Just what I heard somewhere. Flay all the players. We have to protect ourselves. Noha Tahiri. I think you may have read a different news report. The people inside the mosque are the ones who need protection. White Victory. Fuck off, Aliza. Broadsword Ben. I second that. Noha Tahiri. Thought this was an open forum. Nice to hear from you again, Ben, by the way. Broadsword Ben. Screw that and screw you. How the fuck did they get an AR-15? They're illegal as fuck. French Kisser. Who cares as long as they're used to fight Islam? Noha Tahiri. You might care when there are kids with guns in this town, especially since the guns bring gangs. French Kisser. Other way around. I'd rather have gangs than Muslims. Quebec is giving you a message. You're not welcome. Noha Tahiri. You're... 9-inch Nailer. Cops haven't figured out who did it, but the first thing you hear is, aren't we all human and look how peaceful they are? Fleur de Lis. Don't know how many they took out, but it's a start. 9-inch Nailer. Allahu snack bar! Broadsword Ben. Allah fuck bar! Noha Tahiri. Do you even hear yourselves? You're cheering on mass murder. Good guy with a gun. I can't read French. Who the hell is the shooter? An Arab or some angry Quebecois who's had enough of this shit? Noha Tahiri. You should maybe change your user ID. Good guy with a gun. Maybe what I should do is come looking for you. Noha Tahiri. You'd have to leave your mother's basement first. Good guy with a gun. You talk big behind a screen. Noha Tahiri. Also on the radio and in real life. Good guy with a gun. Good to know where I can find you. Noha Tahiri. Overcompensate much? 9-inch Nailer. I heard 4 to 5 Muslims got shot. Flay all the players. Not enough. Broadsword Ben. It's never enough, man. We need a fucking civil war. We need to exterminate them all. Fleur de Lis. What we need is better aim. He missed like 10 to 15 others. 9-inch Nailer. I salute the brothers of the Allegiance who made this happen. Noha Tahiri. The Wolf Allegiance? Broadsword Ben. Who else has the fucking balls? Noha Tahiri. Thanks for clarifying. Now I can report you for incitement. White Victory. Get the fuck out of here. Broadsword Ben. Go dark. Everyone go dark. Noha Tahiri. Turn off your laptops, you mean? Don't forget to clear your histories. Broadsword Ben. You'll get yours, bitch. Noha Tahiri. People like you are the reason for the shooting at the mosque. Broadsword Ben. Thanks for giving me the credit. Noha Tahiri. Thought you were going dark. Broadsword Ben. Wait until you figure out just how dark I am. Chapter 3. Surrounded by the warmth of a sweltering summer night, Rachel Getty removed the jacket she'd thrown on when CPS had gotten the call. Though based in Toronto, community policing had national jurisdiction and had worked the Ontario townships in the past, but this was the first time they'd been summoned to Quebec. The shooting at the mosque was a somber fit with their mandate. They'd immediately flown to Ottawa to meet with Superintendent Killiam, then driven the short distance across the Quebec border to this small town on the fringes of Gatineau Park. In daylight, under the warm wash of sunlight, the town's charm would have been apparent. Gabled houses and stone cottages jumbled together along narrow cobblestone streets, and at two opposite ends stationed on rolling green hills, the university and the church, the secular and sacred, each carving out a sphere of influence. But somewhere between these stalwarts of tradition, a small, bright mosque had taken root, modestly asserting its presence and offering a promise of belonging to its small congregation. It was a newly renovated building, and the architect had given the mosque a distinctly French character. Rachel couldn't have said how, but she recognized it in the pattern of stone and the gallery of windows. Almost as an act of self-defense, the blue and white provincial flag of Quebec flew from a staff in the parking lot. There was no accompanying Canadian flag, and no display of a crescent or a star. No exterior arches, no dome or minaret. A uniquely Quebecois mosque, or the sign of a community in hiding. With the pavement bathed in the glow of police lights and the yellow tape cordoning off the scene from onlookers who were arriving in increasing numbers, the town became like any other in Rachel's experience, its individuality flattened by the banality of procedure. She was no longer seeing shop fronts and cafes. She was checking lines of sight, modes of egress, suspicious faces in the crowd hovering too close to the cordon. Her attention was caught by a woman motioning to a group of reporters. The woman brushed back her hair, straightened the lapels of her stylish coat, and readied herself to speak. She'd checked with Khatak, who'd told her that the woman who'd set up the press conference was Diana Shahada. She was the head of a civil liberties association, renamed and reconstituted after a smear campaign against an earlier iteration of the same group had rendered it defunct. The new organization she fronted would be busier than ever now. Before Shahada could speak, a giant of a man cut his way through the crowd and waved the reporters off. She recognized him as Inspector Christian Lemaire.
"We'll have news for you soon, but this isn't the moment, and this woman, whoever she is not authorized to give you information about a local crime scene."
A babble of voices erupted. Lemaire fixed them with an icy blue glare until they subsided, retreating to their vehicles to make contact with their desks. There was no story yet, but they knew there would be soon. Khattak and Killiam cut across the parking lot, not to join the man who'd shut down the press conference, but to join the woman who was making a fuss over being silenced. Rachel continued to snap photographs of onlookers, of faces in the parking lot, of movement in and out of the mosque, trying to make herself useful until Khattak called her to his side. Technically, she was his junior at community policing, yet they most often worked collaboratively as partners. An urgent conference was taking place between Khattak and the others. Rachel was so intent on it that she was taken by surprise when the tall man stalked over to her and grabbed her phone from her hand.
"Who the hell are you?"
Instantly antagonized by the kind of manner she detested, Rachel glared back at him coldly. Though his 6-foot-plus frame was packed with muscle and his bright blue eyes were hostile, Lemaire didn't intimidate her. Far from it. She'd honed her skills as an officer facing down men like Lemaire, men like her father, Don Getty. Without a word, she removed her police ID from her bag and held it up under his nose. She was tall and strongly built herself. She didn't back up a single step.
"Community policing?"
His head swiveled in Khattak's direction, then his penetrating blue eyes were back on Rachel's face.
"Who's he then? God's gift to the SQ?"
Rachel looked Lemaire over. "What's the matter? Been hoarding that title to yourself?" There was a short pause, and then Lemaire laughed, emphasizing the crow's feet at the corners of his eyes. He made the same survey of Rachel that she'd just made of him, taking note of the jacket she had folded over one arm.
"You don't like being stuffed into a suit any more than I do."
She supposed that was true. His jacket was straining the seams of his shoulders, and his tie had been yanked loose to hang around his collar. She shrugged. "It's just another kind of uniform." After a moment, she added, "Inspector." He made an impatient gesture, his eyes searching past her head, taking note of the growing chaos at the edges of the cordon.
"Call me Lemaire. Everyone does."
He pushed Rachel's phone back into her hand.
"Never seen anything like this, though Christ knows we've been heading to this moment for a while."
His eyes flicked across Rachel's face, making an assessment he didn't share. He nodded at the far edge of the parking lot where two trailers had been set up head-to-head, bracketed by ambulances. The blue and red lights cut across the parking lot, the sirens long since silenced.
"Incident room," he snapped. "Team meeting. Join us, Sergeant Getty."
He was scrupulously attentive to her rank, considering he'd just told her to call him by his name. She wondered how much training he'd had to undergo when it came to interacting with women officers. She was also curious about his lack of an accent. He spoke like an Anglophone, but his name was distinctively French. Christian Lemaire, a bearish brute of a man with a weathered face and an undisciplined mane of hair, but one she would be wise not to underestimate. She followed him to the incident room, reserving judgment for the moment. Chapter 4. Christian Lemaire was a forceful presence on a unit bristling with egos. Within hours of the shooting, command of the operation had been assumed by the Provincial Integrated National Security Enforcement Team, known as INSET. Officers from other law enforcement agencies, including Rachel and Khattak from community policing, and members of the Sûreté, had now been seconded to INSET to function as a single unit. In a room crowded with men jockeying for position, Killiam and Rachel were the only women. Every woman who served in law enforcement was used to similar circumstances. Killiam took control of the room without noticeable effort, and when she was finished, the officers in the room were taking notes. Her voice brisk, she laid out the operational procedures to be followed. What we must determine up front is whether we are investigating a mass shooting or conducting a counterterrorism operation. She nodded at Lemaire. Inspector Lemaire remains in command and all findings are to be channeled to me through him. Nothing gets leaked to the press, I repeat, nothing. She examined each face in the room. We have had no issues with unreliable team members in English Canada. I expect no less from officers in Quebec. Well, Rachel thought, that's one way of dealing with simmering Anglo-Franco tensions, dealing it a death blow at the start with a challenge to national pride. Killiam called Khattak and Rachel up to the front of the room and introduced them. Letting her glasses slip to the tip of her nose, she examined each man in the room, ending with Christian Lemaire. These community policing officers are here to deal with a community in grief and to head off an extremely volatile situation. You've seen Diana Shahada outside. She represents the Muslim Civil Liberties Union, and she will be waiting for us to make our first mistake. She'll try to control the narrative of this shooting, but our priority is to find out who is responsible and to hold them to account. Now, Killiam placed a firm hand on Rachel's shoulder. Make no mistake, these are my officers. They represent me. Inspector Khattak is second in command, and he will be working closely with Inspector Lemaire. Any obstruction of his work or questioning of his loyalties will not be tolerated. Understand that this shooting is a crime against the Muslim community in Saint-Isidore-du-Lac. Have I made myself clear? There was a rumble of assent. Killiam turned the meeting over to Lemaire. I leave it in your capable hands. She pointed at Rachel. Come with me. Quashing her sense of alarm, Rachel followed Killiam to the exit. Are you taking me off this? She asked when they were alone. Like Killiam, she kept her back to the trailer and her gaze focused on the crowds. Family members were in the lot, their grief and heartbreak palpable. Rachel scanned the crowd. To the west of the parking lot, a trio of young women dressed in identical trench coats pressed against the cordon. A pair of female officers held them back. Two of the young women were strikingly similar in appearance, with long, fair hair and blue eyes. The third woman's hair was cut in choppy black waves that were subdued by a rhinestone headband. Killiam cleared her throat. Far from it, Sergeant Getty. I want you to monitor every aspect of the situation and report back to me. If there is insubordination of the kind Inspector Khattak faced over the case in Algonquin, I want to know it immediately. No incident is too small for you to bring to my attention. This is not a case where I expect either of you to fail. Understood, ma'am. Rachel tipped her head, considering. Are you expecting trouble from Inspector Lemaire? Not at all. I paired Khattak with Lemaire deliberately. I can't think of an officer in whom I have more faith. Rachel was glad to hear it. It made a nice change from working under a cloud, even if she and Lemaire had gotten off to a bad start. That's not all, Sergeant Getty. I want you to report to me about Inspector Khattak. Rachel frowned. I'm not spying on Khattak for you. Killiam's response was freezing. I'm not asking you to. I'm asking you to consider whether this particular investigation may be more difficult than others assigned to your unit, more personal for Inspector Khattak. He would never ask to be reassigned. She sighed. He treats each case like personal penance. If it seems to you to be weighing on him too deeply, that's something I want to know. We have plans for Khatak. We don't want to burn him out. She didn't elaborate further, and Rachel didn't dare ask. She was taken aback by the trust being placed in her and was eager to prove herself worthy of it. Seeing her commitment in her face, Killiam unbent to say, Rachel, there may be some unexpected unpleasantness on this team. I know you've been there before, but as your superior officer, I'll treat any complaint you make with utmost seriousness, no matter who it's against. A hesitant smile broke across Rachel's face. She'd never had a woman at her back. Thank you, ma'am. That means a lot. She glanced across at the crowd, some of whom were holding placards that featured appalling statements. But that's not where I suspect most of the trouble will be. Chapter 5. Elise Doucet's blog, translated from the French. Elise Doucet, Montréal, Québec. To insist on a responsible immigration policy is not racist. We have a right to know who is coming here and what they stand for. Is it fair to bring people here and put them in detention centers at public expense when we can't even care for our own? There are people who need government services more than ever, the elderly, the disabled. Meanwhile, those who hate us come to live here on our dime. Our government brings them and then tells us we must be the ones to adapt when they refuse to respect us. They must adapt to us, to our culture, our language, our values. Does saying this make me racist, or does it make me a responsible citizen of Quebec? You asked about the Muslims. I am only against the extremists, the ones who hide their faces. I am not a radical. I am not for La Meute or the Sons of Odin or the Storm Alliance, though I do wish we could work together, maybe have a dialogue. The people of Quebec are always kind and generous, but when you make fools of us, we get angry, and that's when we fight back. Comments. Candlelit Vigil.
100% respect to you for your words. I am not racist either. I am someone who doesn't want to lose everything I love.
Edith Saussier. I agree that we should not fight amongst ourselves. We need La Meute and Storm Alliance, and now that this has happened in Saint-Isidore, the Wolf Allegiance needs to start talking with them again. What is your position on the wolves?
Elise Doucet.
I am for whoever wants to work to build a better Quebec.
Edith Saussier.
They are decent French boys who have been shamefully maligned.
A Beautiful Mercy.
Decent French girls, too.
Elise Doucet.
In the New Quebec, everyone's a racist.
Candlelit Vigil.
We need to change that. We need to change the way they talk about us.
A Beautiful Mercy.
The change has already come.
Chapter 6. The vast machinery of law enforcement was put to work. There were crime scene technicians on the scene, mortuary vans waiting to take bodies to the morgue, grief counselors keeping family members of those who hadn't returned home away from the scene using a wait-and-see vocabulary, senior officers conferring in government offices with local and provincial politicians, guards at the local station with strict instructions on the transfer of the priest Étienne Roy, others at the hospital with those who had been wounded in the shooting and taken away before Issa and Rachel's arrival, and armed guards outside the room of one victim in particular. Killiam was dealing with politicians. Khatak and Rachel were en route to the hospital with Lemaire.
There's more, Lemaire told them abruptly, leaning on his horn to clear the road ahead.
Rachel leaned forward in her seat.
More what?
There's another crime scene. Well, it's part of the same scene, but we cleared it before you got here. That's why the press arrived so quickly. That's why your friend Diana Shahada is here.
He said this to Khatak, but the words didn't have the effect Rachel was anticipating. She thought Khatak might interpret them as an insult and choose to respond in kind. Instead, his face had gone pale, but then he often made connections that weren't apparent to Rachel. The shooter began in the women's section? Lemaire turned left, his car slowing down on the long climb up the hill.
How did you know that?
He made no effort to mask the unease in his voice. We were called to the scene because of our expertise. Khatak's tone and words were neutral, but Rachel knew the undercurrents all too well.
Yes, the women's section. It's in the basement. Four more bodies. We processed them first. They're already at the morgue.
So the shooter came in the side entrance. Khatak's voice had thickened slightly. He turned to look out the window.
Back entrance. This is not the most enlightened community.
Lemaire made no apology for his statement. When Khatak didn't react, neither did Rachel. She'd learned to hold her tongue, to wait for the opportune moment to speak. And she kept Martine Killiam's assessment of Lemaire in mind. She'd called him an excellent police officer, one of the best she knew. So Rachel would wait to see if that was true. She asked a different question, hoping to confound Lemaire's expectations. If the shooter hit the women's prayer area first, why didn't the men have enough time to escape? Lemaire drew into the hospital's parking lot. The receiving area was clogged with ambulances, their lurid lights flashing against the gray concrete. It struck Rachel that for a scene of such urgency and chaos, there was a cathedral hush around events. Christ, Rachel whispered. How many were wounded in the shooting?
Another dozen. The chief surgeon has warned us that many of them will die. You know what an assault rifle does to a person's body. The wounds are too severe. And to answer your other question, the basement is insulated. It has no windows, and the door and rafters are solid.
Khatak shook his head. They would still have heard an assault rifle. Lemaire's interest in Khatak sharpened.
You're right, he said. But each of the four women in the basement was killed execution style, a single gunshot to the head.
Back or front? Khatak asked.
Front, just like the one in the upstairs hallway.
It was personal then. The shooter wanted to look them in the eye. Do you have anything else in terms of victim profile? Lemaire had locked his vehicle and they were headed to the hospital concourse, slipping past the cordon set up by team members to hold back non-essential personnel.
Too soon. It's too soon for any of that. The women were different ages, different backgrounds. The only thing they have in common is that they all wore the veil.
Headscarf or face veil?
At the elevator, Lemaire paused to consider her. He didn't say, as she expected, what difference does it make? He rocked back on his heels in the lift.
So that's why they called you, because of the politics here.
That's not an answer, sir.
Lemaire, he reminded her. I don't let anyone call me sir.
He went on to answer her question.
We could see their faces, so I suppose they wore headscarves. Possibly that made them a target, or maybe they were just in the wrong place at the wrong time.
No. Khatak's response was definitive. A headscarf worn in the mosque doesn't necessarily translate into one worn outside the mosque. We'll need to check that out as it could speak to targeting. But execution-style killing is personal regardless. We can assume the man in the hallway was killed in the same manner to buy the shooter, or shooters, time to use the assault rifle, which brings us to the subject of your priest, a subject we need to discuss. The elevator doors opened onto a scene of chaos. Though triage was still taking place in the emergency department, the surgical ward was packed with medical staff, police officers, and family members. Lemaire cut the discussion short.
You think this is a hate crime, huh?
There was something needling about his tone. Khattak replied evenly. I think it's an act of terror. That's why Inset is here. Lemaire ran his hand over the bristles on his chin. He nodded at a passageway that led off the main reception area. At its end, four armed guards were stationed outside a door.
What on earth?
It was Rachel's turn to be cut off.
We have a suspect under guard in a hospital room. He's being treated for shock.
He shifted his body closer to Khattak, sizing him up head to head.
We caught him running from the mosque after police arrived at the scene and began lockdown. When we caught him, he had blood all over his clothes and on his face and hands.
He jabbed Khattak's chest with a finger.
If this was a hate crime or an act of terrorism, as you say, why was he shouting Allahu Akbar?
Khattak took a step back, but he did so in a way that suggested nothing more than distaste at Lemaire's unwarranted encroachment.
Who was he? Who did you arrest when it was your priest who was found with the rifle in his hands?
A young black man we've identified as Amadou Duchamp.
You identified him?
Despite the press of people waiting to speak to him, Lemaire's attention focused on Khattak.
Fine, then. He identified himself to police.
Khattak was shaking his head. He pulled Lemaire a little aside. So you've arrested a young black man while the priest you found with the weapon in his hands hasn't been processed or arrested?
Lemaire fired up at once. There's no prejudice here, not in my department. The boy ran, he was arrested.
He caught the sharp edge of Khattak's smile, the instant of recognition, and his eyes flared in response. He nodded to himself, clasping his large hands together.
All right. You've made your point, Inspector Khattak. I won't make assumptions about you, and you won't make them about the Sûreté du Québec.
He glanced over at Rachel.
You should have warned me about your boss.
Rachel flashed him an insincere smile.
The superintendent said you're good at what you do. I figured you'd find out for yourself.
Khattak interrupted.
Amadou Duchamp, where is he?
Lemaire pointed to the door under guard.
He's been cautioned and interviewed.
By you?
Khattak's eyebrows went up. Lemaire looked wary.
Preliminary intake only.
And did he confess?
No.
Then I'd like to speak to him, alone.
Khattak was heading toward the room under guard when a commotion broke out at the elevator. A young woman's voice called out Rachel's name. Rachel turned at once. For a moment, memory slashed through her, sharp and sickening, of a beautiful, blank face on a table at the morgue. The face looking back at her was just as beautiful, but very much alive. She hurried over to the elevator and clasped the young woman's hand urgently in her own.
Alisa,
she whispered, shaken by a surge of joy. Sometimes the past was less like a weapon that wounded you and more a harbor from pain. She wasn't alone in feeling it. Aliza reached out and hugged her tightly. Then both women turned at the sound of Khattak's voice.
Aliza,
he echoed softly. Aliza stood still, her arms dropping to her sides. She tilted up her chin, eyeing Khattak with an expression Rachel couldn't interpret, until she spoke, her voice rich with undertones of regret.
I've missed you,
she said to Khattak, as if the admission surprised her. Khattak regarded her gravely, his green eyes steady on hers. With a sigh of defeat, he said,
Not as much as I've missed you.
Then he seemed to remember where he was.
Give us a few moments, he said.
We're in the middle of something. He gestured at the reception desk, and reluctantly she moved away. When he would have headed off to Amadou Duchamp's room, Lemaire stepped into his path. Rachel's eyes widened at Lemaire's confrontational air.
How do you know her? He asked.
Something in Khatak's face softened. From a case some time ago in Waverly, from the murder of Miraj Siddiqui. From his expression, it was clear Lemaire was familiar with the case. A young woman had been found murdered on the pier in the Ontario township of Waverly, a case that had made the national news as the first in a string of so-called honor killings. Lemaire swore loudly in French.
You worked that case, meaning you have a prior relationship?
Khatak's eyes narrowed in suspicion. I didn't know she was here. I haven't spoken to her in some time. How do you know her, Lemaire?
She's been a goddamn thorn in my side since the day she moved to this town. She's a graduate student at the Université Marchand, a journalism student. You watch her, Khatak, and I don't care what your relationship with her is, you don't tell her anything about Amadou Duchamp.
He glanced back at the reception desk and groaned. Next to Elisa, a smartly dressed blonde woman was waving to Lemaire from the other side of the corridor. He raised a hand in half-hearted greeting.
Merde, she's already here.
The woman was so attractive that Rachel was taken aback by Lemaire's reaction.
Who is she?
Isabelle Clément, press liaison for the premier. He sends her to represent the province when matters like this occur. I'll need to speak to her.
His eyes moved to Rachel's face.
Let me speak to her first, then I'll introduce you.
It would have been good to know how the Premier of Quebec was planning to spin this tragedy, as a premeditated hate crime or the act of a deranged lone wolf, but the players were just beginning to assemble, so Rachel agreed to wait. Chapter 7 Khatak didn't view Lemaire as a problem. Lemaire's posturing was standard. Officers of different jurisdictions usually had different priorities when they were thrown together and expected to make it work. This was just the process of working out the kinks. Any judgment Khatak passed on Lemaire wouldn't happen until they'd mapped out preliminary work on the shooting. Then the boundaries would be clear, along with any lines Lemaire was prepared to cross. Until that happened, Khatak was trying to treat the crime scene like any other, though if he'd understood Lemaire correctly, the total number of dead would make the shooting the deadliest of its kind in the nation's history, and that it had happened inside a mosque by a man shouting, "God is greatest," made no sense at all. The province of Quebec had a unique relationship with its minority populations, a status enhanced by the province's distinctive cultural and linguistic heritage, and he knew whatever else happened during the course of their secondment to Inset, he and Rachel would be unraveling that relationship piece by piece, beginning with what had happened to Amadou Duchamp. Having seen him with Lemaire, the guards outside the room were prepared to wave Khatak through. Khatak showed them his ID. He wanted to be sure they checked that anyone who sought access to the room had the appropriate credentials. There were journalists waiting in the hospital concourse, and there might be a shooter at large who had specifically targeted worshippers at the mosque. When he entered the room, Amadou was sitting propped up in his bed. He was dressed in a hospital gown that flapped loosely against his deep brown skin under an air conditioning vent. His clothes were not in the room. One of his arms was handcuffed to the bed rail. At first, he didn't appear to be injured, but when he shifted forward under the fluorescent lighting, Khatak noticed the swelling along one cheekbone. When he saw Khatak, he sat up straighter, brushing his free hand over his hair in a reflexive gesture.
Alhamdulillah, he breathed. You've come.
Khattak hooked a chair closer to the bed. One eyebrow raised, he asked,
You were expecting me?
Does that mean you know who I am?
Aliza and I are friends. She told me you would come. She told me she knew you well, and I've been watching you on the news. We all have.
His eyes were fixed on Khattak, warm and liquid dark. He spoke with a Quebecois accent tinged with West African overtones, his voice melodic and rich. Khattak couldn't pinpoint it, but he thought the young man's first name suggested a link to Gambia or Cameroon. There was a glint of hope in his eyes, his wariness replaced by a frank expression of trust. And if Amadou Duchamp trusted him before he'd begun his interview, it said a great deal about what Aliza must have told him about their past relationship. He wished he could extend that same trust in return, but he'd have to clear the ground first.
Were you expecting an attack on the mosque, Amadou?
Amadou blinked rapidly.
You can't think that's what I meant. You may not know what's been happening in Saint-Isidore, but you must know what it's been like here in Quebec. An attack like this was only a matter of time.
Giant tears welled up in his eyes, spilling down his cheeks to disappear into the paper-thin neck of his gown.
I didn't think I'd be in the middle of it.
Khattak reached for Amadou's hand and squeezed it. He asked if he understood his rights and whether he wanted a lawyer. Amadou gripped his hand with surprising force.
Ya Allah, he said. As God is my witness, I don't need one.
But you were there, Khattak prodded. You saw the attack take place? Do you feel up to telling me about it? Amadou's head fell back against his pillow. He swallowed back a sob.
I wasn't inside when it happened. I'd gone to the mosque to pray. Then I planned to head back to campus. I was on my way when I remembered that I'd forgotten to speak to my friend Yusuf about a meeting. I heard the sound of gunfire as I made the turn back to the mosque. I'm the one who called the police.
His breath was coming faster as he spoke. Khattak murmured a consolation to him in Arabic.
Take your time. There's no rush. I parked and ran back in after I made the call. Maybe there was something I could do, so I made myself go in. There were so many bodies, so much blood. People were calling out, crying. I didn't know what to do, where to start. I helped those I could, and then I looked for Yusuf.
Where was Yusuf?
In the main hall, near Abu Bakr and his son Adam. It was clear they were dead, both of them, and Yusuf had been shot too, more than once.
Amadou released Khattak's hand to gesture at his back.
Here, all over here. I had my kit. I did some preliminary treatment.
Your kit? Amadou nodded vigorously.
I'm training to be a paramedic, so I worked on Yusuf. I told him to hold on.
But you weren't with Yusuf when the ambulance arrived. Inspector Lemaire told me you were arrested running from the scene of the attack. Amadou showed the whites of his eyes.
My God, they'll say anything and expect you to believe it.
Khattak flinched a little, and Amadou softened his tone.
I was the only uninjured person inside the mosque. People were still alive, and I didn't hear any sirens. I ran outside to flag down help. I was calling out to the police, showing them where to go, when one of their officers tackled me. He brought me to the ground.
He showed Khattak his bruised cheek.
They did this to me while I was calling for help.
Exactly the scenario Khattak had feared. He leaned forward, watching Amadou intently.
They said you were running from the scene shouting Allahu Akbar.
Amadou closed his eyes.
No, no, he said. I cried out, Allahu Alam. They just don't know the difference.
Because they couldn't imagine there was a difference, Khatak thought, any more than they could interpret all the nuances of meaning encompassed by a single phrase. It didn't make sense that a person would shout Allahu Akbar at the scene of a terror attack against a Muslim congregation. The way the phrase had been continually linked to terror was in distinct contrast to its daily importance in the lives of members of Amadou's faith. It could be used in any context, to witness an act of beauty, to marvel, to praise, to express gratitude or deepest joy. To use it to mark the murder of co-religionists was an act only thinkable to an extremist fringe. For members of the faith, like Khattak, there was no phrase that offered more grace. Allahu Alam meant only God knows best. In Amadou's case, it had served to warn of despair. He didn't leap to Lemaire's conclusion that Amadou was guilty of mass murder. No weapon had been found on Amadou's body or in his car. He'd done what he could to help, risking his own life to save the life of his friend. Khattak studied Amadou's smooth young face, the earnestness of his expression, the hair he wore closely shorn to the skull. The flimsiness of his hospital gown didn't diminish the elegance of his strong black body, too often seen as a threat, as witnessed by one simple fact. Amadou had been roughed up, then handcuffed to a hospital bed, while the priest, who had been found with a weapon at the crime scene, had been graciously escorted from the mosque. If word got out to Diana Shahada and the civil liberties group that she ran, the investigation would turn on its axis, evolving into something that would end up hindering their work. Yet Khattak knew he would have to speak to her and somehow warn her, try to bring her on board, while watching out for Amadou. Amadou, when you made your way inside the mosque, did you see who opened fire? The young man squeezed his eyes shut.
If I had, he would be here instead of me.
You didn't see anyone else enter the mosque after you did? Think carefully. Amadou's eyes shot open.
Why, who else was there?
Khattak leaned in closer. Just tell me. He was considering the nature of the shooting, the speed with which it had been carried out.
No, no one.
How many entrances are there to the mosque? Do you know it well enough to say? His head bobbed rapidly.
Sister's entrance at the back. I just fixed the lights out there myself. Main entrance in front of the parking lot, and a small side door that leads to the office. That's the door the imam uses.
Are any of the doors kept locked?
Not until late at night, after Isha prayer.
So the gunman could have come from any of three entrances, though the back entrance was the most likely in terms of how Lemaire had described the order of events. But what if there had been a second assailant? They knew there was another gun, a gun that was missing from the scene. Lemaire's men were conducting a perimeter search, but the mosque wasn't far from the lake that bordered the town or from the creek that fed into it. The search would take time, and in the end, it might not prove conclusive. And something else was bothering Khattak. He wondered if Rachel had caught it too.
When did you fix the lights at the sister's entrance?
Amadou turned his head. He was looking for something on the nightstand beside his bed. Whatever it wasn't there.
They took my phone. I could tell you from my calendar if you need an exact time, but it was sometime last night, sometime after Maghrib.
His voice choked a little.
Almost the same time as tonight.
No one was feeling the weight of it yet, Khatak knew. They were still in shock and would remain that way for some time. Investigators, medical staff, family members, witnesses. He'd examined the scene thoroughly, seen the blood marks that desecrated a house of worship, a place of sanctuary. But he'd done so as a trained investigator, shutting everything else away. When he would pray, when he could pray, he'd think of what this meant. Amadou was still speaking.
Aliza mentioned it 2 days ago, so I came prepared to fix the lights. I handled these kinds of jobs at the mosque.
Officially? Amadou's smile was gentle.
Non, Inspector. Just as an act of service, I thought the lights needed to be changed because they'd gone out.
That prickle of warning stirred along Khatak's spine.
They hadn't? They were smashed. That's when I realized why Aliza was worried.
Khatak left the young man with a few additional words of caution. Amadou needed a lawyer without further delay and shouldn't speak to the police again without one present. He was back to navigating a familiar set of tensions that came with the job he'd taken on, but in this case, he didn't hesitate. He was disturbed by the instant focus on Amadou when there were other, more logical avenues to pursue. He hadn't ruled Amadou out as a suspect, but he was wary of a rush to judgment. He'd speak to Diana Shahada to ensure Amadou received fair treatment. The entire team would be working around the clock for the next few days, following every lead, reconstructing the moments of the attack, everything that had led up to it and everything that followed now. It was time for him to deal with what he'd been sent here to do. He found Rachel in the hallway leaning against the wall as Lemaire spoke with the press liaison he had mentioned earlier. Rachel was watching them, but her presence wasn't intrusive. Her hair was combed into a ponytail, and her clothes were a mix of everyday and professional that let her melt into the background.
Anything? She asked at once.
Khatak shook his head.
It's not him.
Sir. Her tone was chiding. Khatak tried not to smile. He knew what she was warning him of, what she never failed to warn him of.
Fine. I don't think Amadou Duchamp is our man.
He summarized what he'd learned from Amadou, and Rachel's thick eyebrows climbed halfway up her forehead. She'd dumped her blazer on a nearby hospital bed, and now she rubbed her arms as she thought. Her ponytail swung over her shoulder as she flashed Lemaire a quick look. He was too far away to hear them. Lowering her voice, she said,
"Lends credence to the idea that the shooter entered from the back. The broken lights suggest recon to me. Someone knew they'd be entering the mosque from the back, so they knocked out the lights."
Khatak had considered this.
Amadou replaced them before the attack.
Rachel shrugged.
So they didn't have a chance to come back and do it again. But there's something else, sir. Something strange. Don't know if these guys have caught it yet, but if Amadou re-entered the mosque to help the victims, that's who he sees inside, right?
Go on.
Then he's back outside and he gets tackled to the ground. But even then, there's someone he doesn't see, either inside or outside in the parking lot.
Khatak had known she would get there. The strange thing was that Lemaire hadn't. Or maybe there just hadn't been enough time for Lemaire to have told them everything he'd picked up. Lemaire had made a fair offer. Withholding judgment at the outset of an investigation was necessary in any case. He put a hand on Rachel's arm to silence her. Lemaire and the Premier's press liaison were headed in their direction.
Sir, Rachel whispered, We need to figure out the timing of events here. When exactly Amadou went outside to flag down help, when he went back in, and so on.
Why, specifically?
Because Amadou didn't mention seeing Etienne Roy, and if Amadou didn't see him, we need to know where Roy was when the shooting was taking place.
Chapter 8. Isabelle Clément possessed the understated glamour and effortless chic that Rachel associated with French women. She wore a dark plum dress that flattered her pale complexion and a pair of black heels that would have crippled Rachel in her job. She showed no sign of finding them difficult to manage. Her makeup was discreet, her ash-fair hair swept up neatly in a low chignon. Instead of a briefcase or a purse, she carried an electronic tablet. She was petite and very beautiful, with a mildly critical manner. Lemaire introduced them, a glint of sardonic amusement in his eyes as he watched Rachel give the press liaison the once-over, smoothing a hand over her own blouse. Rachel ignored him. Another woman on the scene wasn't competition. She was a colleague of sorts. And if it came to it, what the hell did Lemaire think she was in competition for? There was a crowing masculinity about the man that set Rachel's teeth on edge. She had found something like it in nearly all the men she had trained with until she'd come to work for Khattak. Her instincts told her that Lemaire was a brute of a cop compared to Khattak, with his restraint, but she was annoyed with herself for wasting even a little of her time rising to his bait. Clément didn't smile at either of them, and her response to Khattak wasn't what Rachel had learned to expect. Clément glanced at him, her attention briefly caught by the shadow of Khattak's dark beard. Then her attention returned to the tablet she held in her hands. She seemed competent, but worried.
"I've spoken to Inspector Lemaire. We've outlined the statement the Premier is prepared to make."
Rachel shifted away from the wall. One of her strengths as Khattak's partner was to anticipate the questions he'd want to ask, but make them seem like her own.
"Will you be naming Roy or Amadou Duchamp?"
Clément gave a short, sharp shake of her head, her fingers sliding across the surface of the tablet. She pulled up a document on her screen.
"All the Premier will be doing at this point is expressing condolences to the people of Saint-Isidore."
"Not to the congregation of the mosque, specifically?" Clément looked up, giving Rachel her full attention.
"Not yet. We need more time to work out precisely what to say, and it would help if we had all the facts at hand. The quicker you can deliver those, the clearer our statement will be."
Rachel noted the "our," a deliberate expression of the woman's political clout, letting them know her hands were on the reins. But as press liaison, she might be overstepping her role on the Premier's team. From the curl of Lemaire's lip, it was possible he thought so too. He winked at Rachel out of Clément's line of sight. She firmed her lips repressively, ignoring Lemaire's quick smile. Khattak spoke up.
"The Premier is waiting to see if a member of the mosque community is responsible for the attack before extending his condolences."
The quietly delivered statement conveyed his anger nonetheless. Clément put her tablet away. Her eyes flicked from Lemaire to Rachel to Khattak.
"When was the last time you visited Quebec?"
she asked him.
"I'm aware of the news," Khattak said. "It's necessary in my position." "Whatever you've been following, if you haven't been here, you have no way of understanding the nature of our concerns. Not only does the Premier have to manage Anglo-Francophone tensions, there's also the recurring problem of immigration. Any statement he makes must consider these angles."
Khattak's voice became even quieter. "I didn't realize the Premier considered immigration a problem. Or is it only a certain type of immigration?" Rachel tried to make her face blank and failed.
Khattak was never antagonistic. He rarely stated his positions in advance. Whatever mask he wore in order to do his job, he'd chosen to discard it now. Yet, perversely, his frankness seemed to reassure Clément. Perhaps she had been wondering how careful she needed to be about offending Khattak's sensibilities.
"Then you understand a little better than I thought."
She didn't sigh. She was too chic and self-possessed for that.
"But whatever you're thinking about this..."
"Me," Rachel substituted for "this," a little world-weary at the way it always came down to this. Women exerted themselves to make an impression on Khattak, whose dark good looks had derailed many a witness's powers of concentration. But Clément was a professional, and apart from that sidelong look at Khattak's smooth, dark beard, she had gathered herself quickly. Her tone became oddly persuasive.
"Superintendent Killiam assigned you here at the Premier's request, not to cover things up, rather to expose them."
"Why?" Rachel demanded. "What the hell's been happening here? No offense, but Saint Isidore du Lac strikes me as somewhat of a backwater." This was a harsh indictment given its proximity to Ottawa, the nation's capital, and its picturesque setting on the fringes of Gatineau. Clément's smile was coolly ironic.
"Maybe it is, Sergeant."
She pressed the back of her neck with a delicate hand, and the loop of gold at her nape unwound, falling in disciplined waves.
"But I think you may be unaware of the undercurrents this backwater has produced."
"Oh, how so?"
"The codes of conduct.
Saint Isidore du Lac was the second town to pass a code, modeled on the one from Hérouville. It banned certain cultural practices that were unwanted here." Khattak's eyes slid to Rachel. The shooting at the mosque might be a hate crime, it might be a terrorist attack, but whatever else it was, it had just exposed an expanding rift in Quebec.
"Why was a code of conduct necessary?" he asked. "Does the town view the community of congregants here as a threat?"
Clément avoided a direct answer.
"The code is about Québécois identity. It's meant to protect the values that Québécois hold dear."
Her eyes drifted down the hospital corridor, and her smooth self-possession wavered. Nodding at the families of the victims of the shooting, she said,
"These are not the values I mean."
Khattak didn't respond to this, but Rachel knew they were thinking the same thing. The cultural fault lines in Quebec had expanded from codes of conduct to encompass provincial hearings and then to the attempt to pass a Charter of Values for Quebec. The 2013 legislation had mandated the uncovering of one's face when providing or receiving state services. It had also prohibited public sector employees from wearing conspicuous religious symbols. Though Catholic symbols were considered a reflection of Quebec's heritage, all others were banned. As a result, the new law had been roundly condemned on the grounds of freedom of religion. Yet though the Charter of Values failed to pass, iterations of it, such as Bill 62, had been revived and remained contentious. But were they contentious enough to have been behind the shooting at the mosque? Chapter 9. One of Lemaire's officers called him away. Rachel caught the name Roy before the conversation was cut off. Lemaire gave her a look she couldn't read. Assessing, suspicious, strangely calm.
"I'll be back, huh? Very soon."
It sounded like an apology, but Rachel couldn't think why this blue-eyed bear of a man would figure he owed her one. He was a homicide cop with the Sûreté, and God knew what Rachel was, a question she'd been asking herself since she and Khattak had returned from working a case in Greece. She'd needed time to reflect on her experiences during that case
where she'd ended a personal relationship that had never had the chance to blossom. She'd taken a break from her usual activities to take that time for herself. She hadn't hit the ice to play hockey in 6 weeks. This new case was a good distraction. She might hate herself for thinking of a tragedy as a diversion, but she was honest enough to face the truth of her thoughts head on. She was trying to do what Hattak did by insulating her thoughts. She found herself speaking to Lemaire with some attempt at collegiality.
We'll be speaking to Aliza Siddiqui. Just call us when you're done.
He paused.